Rewind 2 days. It's the 30th of December and the four of us have stopped at a service station on the way to the beach cottage in Wales for our annual New Year's piss-up. I'd been to the loo and everyone was taking ages, so I was standing aimlessly next to WH Smith's doing what I always do at service stations, kicking the floor, checking out travel pillows and thinking how useful they are but how they take up so much room in a suitcase, watching sunburnt kids gleefully drizzle Fanta into the creases on those massage chairs. Eventually, I entered the shop, snaffled a fizzy cola bottle from Pick and Mix as a sweet, sweet micro-screw you to the man, swallowed it whole, then promptly bought a packet of Rolos out of guilt. Amy and Gavin, the only couple I know where I'm friends with each of them equally, scuttled round from the toilet area as I came out of the shop. "Do you want my first Rolo?" I asked Amy. "That means I hate you." "Actually, I'm feeling a bit sick, so I can't," she said. She glanced nervously at Gav. "You can just bite off the outside," I suggested. "I'll have the toffee, even though it'll have your germs on it." This time she ignored me. She looked at Gav again. He grinned now, and the two of them took on a kind of holy sheen. She spoke again.
"Isabel Jane Sutty, we've got something to tell you." The sentence, "we've got something to tell you," is the benevolent cousin of "we need to talk." Other relatives include "are you sitting down?" and "are you standing up?" and "are you standing on a bouncy castle?" Everyone knows that "we need to talk" is never, ever good. When you're a teenager, it means that the person who's said that is then going to talk for a long time, and that the other person is going to sit on a swing with their heart going like a machine gun, using their tatty cuff to wipe away the tears and snot. "We've got something to tell you," on the other hand, is normally about good news for the speakers, the clues in the plural. It's not going to affect you as the listener, unless your doctor likes to hire barbershop quartets to deliver the news of a terminal illness.
"Mm-hmm,"
I said in response to Amy and Gav, feigning nonchalance as I tipped loads of Rolos into my mouth, while grasping onto the nearest thing for support, one of those machines where you operate a metal claw, which I've only ever seen pick up a toy once at Alton Towers, then drop it just before it got to the chute. Don't ever bother with those machines unless you want to teach a child never to trust anyone. I had a bad feeling about whatever Amy and Gav were going to tell me. They obviously had a very good feeling about whatever they were going to tell me. Beaming from ear to ear, they then proceeded to say one word each. I dread to think how they decided to do this and whether they did it for everyone they were telling. Amy said, "we." Gav said, "are." Amy said, "going." Gav said,
"to."
Amy said, "to." And Gav said,
"No, I just said two, it's have now."
They giggled for a few seconds as my knuckles whitened. "Shall we start again?" said Amy. "No," I said, "I think I'm getting the..." Gav interrupted.
"Have," he said.
"Eh?" Amy chortled. And I said, my mouth a cave of sugary stalactites, "latte? Fry up? Bath?" And they grinned, took a breath, and in unison said the word I'd been most expecting and most dreading. Baby.
Woofed,
I managed. Then, "well done."
"Oh,"
they said. "Auntie Izzy." In fact, that was the first, but not the last time, I have heard the term Auntie Izzy. Auntie Izzy drummed up a picture of an old woman in a black dress who's never married, who's covered in cat hair, and who has a permanent trail of cake crumbs across her neglected décolletage.
"Auntie Izzy? Oh, she had a suitor once. He worked at the Spam Factory. That was years ago. Still, she's happy in a way. She has a tapestry."
I didn't want to be Auntie Izzy, and I sure didn't want them to be Mummy and Daddy. I was aware that I should have been pleased for them, but my heart was plunging deep down into my trainers, and no amount of Rolos could stop it.